And it is just 3:05 on this Saturday, the 20th of October 2018. And I am interviewing Joe Doyle. And Joe, I'd like you to give me some kind of background information about yourself, where you grew up, your first station, age when you joined a pirate. And before broadcast, were you an anorak yourself?
Yeah, oh, well, I grew up in Dublin. Was in a children's home for the first part of my life. So by the time I got freedom and got out of it, pirate radio was beginning to show up. So my first station, I was a CB crazy guy, loved CB radio, and I listened to Luxembourg every night. Bob Stewart on Luxembourg, The Voice, that was just, you know. And so CB radio became a thing that I was very interested in. And I was at home, I lived in Cabra at the time, in 1980, I was 15 years of age, and I heard this station, and there was an unmerciful buzz on this station. This station was really horrible. And they were looking for anybody that had any technical experience to come down, and they were in an old cinema in Cabra. I don't know the name of the cinema anymore, but it's still there. And I went down anyway and had a look at this. I know people laugh about the biscuit box, but this was a USA biscuits tin. And I looked at it like I was such a professional person. But I saw this wire that was just sitting there and it wasn't doing anything. And I touched it off the side of the box and the buzz was gone. So all of a sudden I was a genius, a god. And they offered me a show. And when I went home that evening and I was listening to the station very clear and no buzz, I thought, wow, that I was there and now I'm here and I'm listening to this. This is not CB radio. This is good radio. And they play music. So that's what got me. That's what got me hooked. A small little station in Cabra, and I moved on then to a medium wave station in Glasnevin called Moonlight Radio, and I was there for about 2 years. A guy called Damien McTiernan had set it up. So it was a 50 watt AM station, but AM back then travelled, so you could have a good reception in different parts of the city. So we were in Glasnevin. We had 50 watts on AM and we thought we were great. It was called Moonlight Radio because we only came on at night. Great name. Really just everything about radio started to grip me then. You know, I was playing music, we were taking requests, this was brilliant. So I moved around to all sorts of different stations, North Dublin Community Radio and different stations like that, until I set up one in Ballymun of my own called Ballymun Community Broadcasting. And I was basically there until the close down in 88. We closed down like everybody else, even if we were just a small little station. But yeah, so that would have been my introduction. After that, then I think my main thing was Radio Dublin onwards and then Heartbeat, before I suddenly realised that I could do this legally. So now.
So the stations themselves, they came in different shapes and sizes, and the. Some were, you know, like if you talked about Radio Dublin, Radio Dublin was quite a powerful station.
It was in the 80s when I used to listen to it. I mean, you're talking about Tracy Evans and people like that. These were huge stars, John Paul, you know, and this was a big station. And it seemed to be a station that offered people a chance to get their broadcasting wings, so to speak. So it was huge. Yeah, it was big, and for a lot of reasons. You know, you had the Lebanon Request Show. That was big. You were also on shortwave as well, which not many stations were at the time. I think the only thing that ever let Radio Dublin down in the 80s, as far as I was concerned, was quality. They had the signal, but the quality of that signal seemed to be missing. And when you take it that Sunshine and Nova brought us that quality and everybody tried to aspire to that quality afterwards, I always wondered why they didn't. You know, why Radio Dublin had so many great broadcasters there that didn't stay for obvious reasons. And I always think the quality was one of those reasons. And when I eventually went to Radio Dublin in 89, that was something that we tried to change.
A lot of the stations then that were bigger, also they carried news services. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts on that one?
I listened to Nova all the time. when it was on the air. Regardless of what station I was with, I listened to Nova at home, or listened to it on when the Walkman suddenly hit the streets and you could actually walk around listening to your station. Brilliant. And I listened to Nova, and what I loved about Nova was news, because you could find out what was going on. So I always listened to Jenny MacIver, Sybil Fennell, Brian Dobson, all of those people doing the news. So I would have been, I still am a news buff, so I would have been then very much interested in news. So that was something as well, but it's very hard to achieve unless you have a paying staff who can come in and, you know, gather that news and broadcast it. We tried to do it in one of the temporary licenses that we were on, one of the earlier ones in Irish Music Radio in 2004, and we couldn't do it. You had all the technology there, but you just couldn't find the broadcasters or the people with the voice to do it. So, but back in the 80s, I think one of the main things that would have really annoyed RTE was the fact that these pirates were putting on an absolutely brilliant news service, and they did.
Whenever you talk to people who have been involved in unlicensed radio, they have an anecdote or two that they've polished up over time. Share one with me.
An anecdote, oh God. In 1983, myself, I had talked to you about Moonlight Radio earlier on, but we decided we're going to be big, and we got into talks with a group of people who owned it, the Green Cinema in St. Stephen's Green shopping centre is there now, and we talked to them about letting us use a room in there because we wanted to bring our signal into Dublin, and we did. And we got the top room in the cinema, and everything was grand, and we had to decide on what name we wanted to use. I'm going to bring Moonlight Radio, wouldn't be very attractive as a big station. So we decided on Radio City, and we got in touch with a guy called Maurice Mann, who had been involved in Radio City when it was in Capel Street. And we asked him, could we, you know, we use the name, and, you know, did he have any jingles or idents that we could use? And he said, yes, we could use the name, but we'd have to go down to... I can't remember the name, but it was in the same building as Nova. Bay City Sounds, actually, was the name. And get the masters from them, because they did all the jingles. So we went down there, and there was a lot going on in Nova at the time. When we walked in the front door, there were a set of record decks on the side, you know, these huge record decks. And I remember technically going, wow, I like this. And this guy came down to us and he said, you know, what are you doing here? And we said, we're waiting for the guy from Bay City Sounds to find the master of what we were looking for. And he introduced himself as Chris Carey, totally gobsmacked at this stage, you know, actually talking to Chris Carey. And the thing he said to me that has always stayed with me, he said, why do you want to copy something? Be innovative, you know, do something new. I mean, we thought as we were leaving there, yeah, we will do that. Now, the Radio City thing we didn't do, but I always remember what he said, be innovative. It's funny because I know since innovation is actually on his tombstone, and he was a great innovator, but he was right. Why do something that was already done? Like Radio City had been used, that do something else. So we did.
It's a good story. Were you ever in a studio when the department visited and asked you to cease and desist?
Twice. Both in Radio Dublin. Yeah, we were. April 7th, and I know this because my daughter's birthday is April 7th. April 7th, 1990, we were in Inchcore Road. We were actually in the middle of moving to premises around the corner in Vincent Street. So a lot of what we had was being taken away in bits and pieces. And I was in the new premises. I had a flat over the new premises in Vincent Street. And I was there one day, 7 o'clock in the morning. One of our presenters who was supposed to be going on to the air that morning came down. He's knocking hell out of the front door. And I went down and I said, are you okay? He said, there are cars, everything, everywhere in the radio station. Now, at that time, we had a little system that if the door went in, without one of us switching a particular switch, all the electricity would go off. And all of the transmission equipment that we had in Radio Dublin was either in a very dodgy attic or under a floorboard. A very, very dodgy setup altogether. So what had happened, by the time I got there, the guards were trying to figure out why they couldn't get the electricity back on again. Because they couldn't trace the transmitter. And I went up, and of course I knew nothing about anything. I was just a caretaker. I had been down at, I don't know whether you remember the 9/11 stores, but I'd been down at the 9/11 store getting a coffee when they came. Of course I hadn't been, but they'd been there for quite some time. So that was the first time. And what they did was they started to try and pull down floorboards and walls. The owner of the premises came, and after that, everybody was asked for identification. What were they doing there? And they slowly just—they really got bored, and they left. So that was the first one. The second one was it had to do with Radio Ireland. No, was it Century? Century had closed, and for some reason, I don't know how, on Cablelink at the time, you had radio channels. And for some reason, once they had closed, Radio Dublin was coming over this signal that they had on Cablelink. I don't know how it worked, but we were there. And this got up somebody's nose, I don't know why. And I can't remember the year that they came in, but it was about, I think it was 92 or so. I was there, I opened the door. Two people identifying themselves from the Department of Communications were there, and a few guards were there as well, and they asked us to switch off. They didn't want to take any equipment, they didn't want to come into the building, they had a warrant, we could switch off or they could switch us off. So we switched off, and they left. And it's the strangest raid I've ever been involved in, because they took nothing. And about an hour later, when the owner came up and went like, what's going on, and we explained, everything was back on, and we never heard from them again. But that 100.3 thing on Cablelink or whatever it was, that died. That disappeared. So we weren't on it. But so somebody obviously knew that was a reason why. Because there was no other reason for them to walk over. If they'd come in, the transmitter was there in the back room, they would have taken it. And then we'd have been off the air, but they didn't.
When you look back over those kind of glory years, there's obviously a big date, which is the 31st of December in 88, when everybody was obliged, requested to close down so that they would have an opportunity to go forward for a licence. Do you remember that?
I do. I remember I was living in Ballymun at the time. As I said, we had a station on there. And I remember it very well, because I had about six or seven different radios all recording different stations at the time. I was a major anorak, even though I was working radio. And myself and a guy called Alan Hunter and a gentleman who's no longer with us, Dave Cunningham, Dave C, myself and Alan Hunter went down to Class, who were closing down at the time, and Dave C was on the air in Class. And it was a sad time, because we didn't know what was coming, and we didn't know if the authorities actually had the means to bring forth local radio in the way that had been in the UK or whatever. So everybody's kind of tense and stuff. But after David finished the show on Class, we went over to Q102, and I think Dave Kelly was on the air. I have seen a photograph. We went down and Dave guested on Dave's program, if that indeed was the disc jockey that was on, as far as I know it was, while myself and Alan Hunter stood away and watched. That was something else. That was like really emotional. I mean, you actually realise, okay, we've just come from Class and now we're in queue and they're closing down. And it was pretty much like that, with Sunshine going and queue going even after being asked to stay on. You know, that famous quote that we've been offered so much money to go all the way to midnight instead of close. I think it was 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. So yeah, I remember it very, very well. And I remember thinking, God, you know, is that it now in radio? Are we finished now? What's going to come out of it? Because up until that, you'd basically just transmitter, clear frequency, switch it on, and away you go. So yeah, I do remember very well, but I will always remember it for my memories of Dave C, because I worked with him in Radio Dublin then a year or two later. We became good friends right up until the time he passed away. A brilliant broadcaster, so, so underrated. He should have been in RTE or someplace. He just had that talent. It was just seeping out. So I always remember the close down, because I spent that night with Dave C and Alan Hunter jumping around to different stations. We tried a few other stations, but they wouldn't let us in. You know, they were all doing their own thing. But Q Q102, it was just at Q102 in Mount Street. It was an open eye opener. Jesus, the studio is gorgeous. You know, come from class, studio was okay. Go to Q, you know, there's thousands and thousands of pounds worth of studio. It was brilliant.
As the silence of 88 and 89 slowly drifted away, and there was a new raft of intrepid broadcasters challenging things. Do you remember much of that period?
Yeah, I was one of them. I remember waking up the next morning and scanning the band. And there was nothing there except RTE, and I think Millennium was still on the air at the time. So down that end of the band, everything above the 90s was blank. You could actually hear BBC Radio in some cases. So yeah, there was nothing on the air. And I was one of those people that thought, you know, like, there should be something. Because you think, oh, we're going to bring in legal radio. And then you realise that it's not that simple and it's not going to happen that quickly. And we were told then that Millennium had an extension to their licence remit. Remember, they were on for the Millennium 88. And I was at home one evening and Dave C. arrived up at the house and said, Joe, what equipment have you got? And I said, what we had. Gather it, we're going to Radio Dublin. And I said, why are we going to Radio Dublin? He said, they need help. I said, okay. I said, I'm not bringing any equipment to Radio Dublin, but I'll go over to Radio Dublin. And I went over to Radio Dublin and I met the owner and I met a guy called Mark Grace. And I ended up on the air. And they had a strict policy at the time, 3 songs before you talk or before you play a jingle and all this type of stuff. And when I was finished that show, the owner came to me and he went, you know, we were supposed to be doing this, that and the other. I said, well, I was. At least I thought I was. The problem I had at the time was the phone kept ringing and it wouldn't stop. The phone just, there was a light and the thing just kept flashing. And, you know, it almost took over the show because you're trying to, you know, oh God, we have listeners. You know, it's great. Of course we have listeners. There's nobody else on the city listeners. So I walked away from that in January because I thought, no, I'm not having that. They were on AM, big AM. They were on FM, big FM, even though the FM was no longer on the mountain. It was back in Inchicore Road. So we had a huge listenership. But I just didn't think that a person who could come to you and say, well, you weren't doing what you were doing, when I actually was doing it because I was so excited. Here I am on the big 253 and, you know, I was doing everything I was told to do. But I got the same call then again from Dave C. just after February, early March 89. Same thing. We got to go back. They've been raided. They have nothing. Oh, so we went over anyway, and when we arrived in Inchicore, there was a gang of kids is the best way to describe it. School kids running the station. And the owner eventually arrived down because they put out these frantic calls on the air that there was these strange people in a car in the driveway and they keep knocking on the door and they weren't sure whether to let us in or not. So the owner came anyway, and of course he knew Dave C. Then became 3 years of my life that was really life changing. I met my wife there, so you know, like, there was loads of things coming. But yeah, we ended up giving equipment, we ended up putting the station on, we ended up getting rid of all the riff raff that was there, the kids hanging around the place and that, and we ended up getting rid of the owner, who had taken to sleeping in the premises at night time after he had 2 raids in February, and I wasn't there for them, but they were pretty devastating raids. And then he was anxious to come back on, but he hadn't got anything. He had no equipment and he had no people to, he'd kids, and he had a tape system and a really wonky FM transmitter, and the tapes were just playing reverse all the time, and he had religious programs that he was putting out, so it was kind of a mess when we got there. So what we did was, when we got there, we put together the station, we changed the format to a kind of a more easy listening format, and we got people like Paul Vincent, Dave Cunningham, Alan Hunter, Bernard Evans, myself, a few other names of people I can't remember, and we put together a lineup, which I thought was quite good. And from there then it seemed to grow and grow until FM 104, or Capital as it was at the time, they were about to come on, and a lot of pressure was being put on the station to close. It didn't, obviously. But later on that year then, 98 came on, and we realised that they're using all our music. They're playing the same songs. What's, they put out an advert in the paper. So we changed it again. We changed it to Love Songs. And that gave us a slot in the market, that FM one, Capital and 98. And then, of course, the RTs weren't doing so. We were happy with that. But that was a great time, because so much things were happening in terms of the new stations were coming on. We were still there. There was a court case that the owner of Radio Dublin had taken against the Broadcasting Act. And he had at the time a restraining order, but he had an order against the department from raiding the radio station until such time as this constitutional case was dealt with. I don't know much about the constitutional case because I wasn't involved in it, but I do know that in Radio Dublin at the time there was this feeling that we were okay, we wouldn't be touched, and it remained that way till 2003 for that Black Tuesday raids that came that year. We remained one of the few stations that was continuous at that time, right up to the up to 2003. And after that, because of all other things that were going on in the background, which I don't want to talk about, I was in a position at the time to switch it off. And we switched it off, and we came back with a station called ICE, Irish Country Entertainment, because at that stage Radio Dublin was playing country music. So it was kind of you were kind of evolving, and evolving because of everything around you was evolving as well. That was cool. It was a good time, because you were getting if I could tell you just one small story, is we spent a weekend in what used to be Channel 2 in Radio Dublin. Anybody that was there will know what Channel 2 was. And myself, Bernard Evans, and a guy called Tony Quinn, we spent a weekend with maybe a couple of hundred records, putting them on to tape and recording them onto tape as part of our new format. We weren't going to ask disc jockeys to come in and play the music. I'm going to ask disc jockeys to come in, and this is how you play it. You take tape one, you put it in there, you play the next song, and it went like that. So you were strictly formatting. But we spent the weekend, the three of us, in that room, eating pizza and recording these songs onto tape. And eventually, at the end of it, having 48 tapes, which went on a run. So you have tape one, tape two, and all of that. And we quickly became known as the 3-2-1 cue tapes, because at the beginning of each song, we had 3-2-1, and you press your pause button, and you can be damn sure the song was going to start. Of course, you can't tell that to disc jockeys who are not listening to you, and suddenly you find 3-2-1 is going out on the air. So we quickly became known as the 3-2-1 radio station. Very embarrassing, but it's just one of those little funny type of things. Like today, of course, you have MP3 and you have your mouse and you don't, you know, but back then records were skipping, record players needed needles and stuff like that. We didn't have carp machines, so we had the next best thing. We had tapes and tape decks, which you went through like huge of them, but all of the tapes that we had, the 48, were all on reel to reel as well, so we had them backed up. And it's embarrassing to say reel to reel, because people go, you what? But that's where we had them, and that was fun. Strange, but fun. So we became known as the 3-2-1 Q station. Much to Bernard Evans's disgust, he was like, lads, we've got to do something. And you're trying to say to the disc jockeys at meetings, please, you know the 3-2-1 Q? That's when you pause, just after Q. We don't want to hear it. But eventually then CDs started to come in, and that kind of eliminated that, because we could then throw the tapes. So I have tapes, some of the tapes at home, and it is embarrassing, but it's fun. One of those, you know, we want to be professional, and we ended up being the least professional as you could get.
So Studio 2 metamorphosized into ICE. What's the story of ICE?
Well, what happened with ICE is we had moved to Radio Dublin, moved to Inchcore in 1992, I think. And I'd got married. I'd met Audrey, my wife, and I'd got married. And I'd moved out from living in the radio station. So I was living in Ranelagh at the time. And things were beginning to come out in the newspapers, and stuff was beginning to be said about stuff which I didn't really want to know much of. And eventually, myself and the owner of the station had a parting of ways, because I simply wasn't liking the things that I was hearing. And So I left the station, and we actually moved down to Clare. We moved down to County Clare, and we moved in 95 or 96. We came back to Dublin. My daughter was born, and I came back to work on a station called 9711 Community Radio Station in Finglas. It was one of the first community radio stations to be licensed. It was licensed, and Near FM were licensed, and we were both on the same frequency, so we would share days and share times. And so I was working on that, and I was tracked down by the owner, who said, look, you know, there's some problems going on here. Is there any chance you could come over and take over? I kind of can't. I said, you know, like, I'm doing this and everything else. But pirate radio being pirate radio, I kind of came back into my system. Community radio is great, but there's an awful lot of restraints on you, and there's an awful lot of things you can and cannot do. And I'm very much a managerial type of person, so I'm embarrassed to say this, but I don't take being told things very lightly, especially if I think that they're wrong and I know that it can be done a different way. So what I did start to do a morning show from about 8 o'clock to about 12, and then a guy called Maurice Nevin sadly passed away as well, no longer with us. He would come in and he would do the 12 to 6. And then this was from a studio in town, just off of Con Street, over a music kind of, you know, they did it was a school of music or something. So we would beam the signals back from there. And that went okay for a while until I got dumped out of the community radio station. And so we were talking, this is 97, we were talking about it, and I bumped into Tony O'Hara from Heartbeat. And Tony was saying, you're on Radio Dublin, like, you know, what's the story, you know, can I get a show, blah, 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 what's the story? And we said what we were doing, you know, we had two of us, myself and Maurice, from this studio in town. And then everything else after 6 o'clock in the evening came from Inchicore or came from Clondalkin or wherever it came from. And so Tony came, and I worked with Tony for a while. And the thing I remember about Tony was his total interest in radio. You know, he really had a huge interest in radio. And he got the first whispers of what was going on in relation to accusations made against the owner of Radio Dublin. And he was like to me one day, we got to do something here. This is, you know, this is not going to be good, he said, because I lived in the 70s. I've heard these accusations before, so they're not something new. So he talked me into putting Heartbeat back on as a pirate from the old Heartbeat studio. So 97 to 98, 99, we had Heartbeat on. And we switched it off then to apply for the license that Q102, or what was Light, eventually got. So while this was off, we're heading into the 2000s. I was asked once again and offered a bit of money this time to go up to Radio Dublin. So between 2000 and 2003, I was running Radio Dublin up to the time of the Black Tuesday, when we were raided. We were one of the first back on after the raid, but at this stage court cases had been on, and people were, you know, Radio Dublin was a dirty word, even though the people who worked in Radio Dublin had nothing to do with what happened. And even I, for some of the accusations, I was only 15 years of age and I wasn't anywhere near radio at that stage, you know, so how could I have been involved? And you have the likes of people like Dave Fanning and Marty Whelan, and all these people who were involved in Radio Dublin one stage or another, you know, how could you tar them with it? But there were people out there that wanted to tar us. And the decision then after the 2003 raid was, let's put this back on, but let's put it back on as Ice FM. And let's just leave Radio Dublin where it needs to be, out there in history, and people can make up their own decisions. And we did that until Phantom decided they were going to go and get themselves a temporary license. And suddenly that idea that I always had about, you know, having management of a station and being able to do without being raided, then yeah, like that idea. And we applied for a temporary license. We originally wanted to call it Cara FM, and we ended up calling it Irish Music Radio. It came on in 2004. We got the license 2 weeks before we came on the air, so we didn't know, you know, we were going to do this. And then you've got to put a radio station together. That was great. So that's where Radio Dublin ended, and that's where Ice FM came from and ended as well, because we thought we can do this legal. So all of the people from Ice FM and other people put money into it, and we put it on as a temporary license, and we brought it back once or twice. The BAI had gone on this whole thing that they're going to license all these stations. They're going to license the dance station. They're going to license the this, that, and the other station. They're going to license two country and Irish stations. So we went then from Irish Music Radio to country and Irish Music Radio, covering the Northeast, or at least covering what we thought was going to be the broadcast service area that we were going to get if we applied for one of these licenses that they ended up, because of the crash and everything else, that they ended up not advertising. But that's where Radio Dublin ended. Loads of people have their views on how it ended. That's how it ended. We just decided, you know, let's just stop. And we did.
Joe, thank you very much for a fascinating story. Time 15:35 on 20th the 10th. Walter Hegarty and Joe Doyle in conversation. Thank you.